I think that we now have an opportunity to see a resolution to this that avoids bloodshed.
A massive rally in Myanmar. This is Thursday, the 18th of February, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, a big uptick in attacks on Asians in the United States. China using vaccine to win friends in parts of Europe. We have an explanation of the surge in Bitcoin. And a deadly winter storm sweeps through much of the United States. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Thousands of demonstrators gathered Wednesday in the streets of Yangon, Myanmar's largest city, despite a ban on gatherings of more than four people imposed by the military. Roads and bridges leading into and through Yangon were blocked by cars with their hoods up, making them appear to have engine trouble, a new tactic employed by protesters to keep out police and military vehicles. More now from Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan.
Cars appeared to be broken down across Myanmar's largest city of Yangon on Wednesday. It was the latest creative protests against the military coup, from taxi drivers, commuters and even public transportation employees. Their aim was to block military and police from moving in on protesters. Min Chor joined the demonstration downtown.
I think the civil disobedience movement is efficient because the government officers are joining the protest and the junta has to ask them to go back to work. We, the protesters, need to keep going.
Tens of thousands of demonstrators flooded the streets of Yangon and were joined by celebrities and veteran activists. On Tuesday, at a press conference, a military spokesperson said they would hold a fair election but gave no date. Police filed an additional charge against detained leader Aung San Suu Kyi of violating a natural disaster management law, on top of earlier charges of illegally importing six walkie-talkie radios. Recently, the army has given itself extensive search and detention powers, and there have been penal code amendments aimed at stifling dissent with tough prison terms. Despite this, demonstrations have continued in towns across the ethnically diverse country. The civil disobedience movement has been growing with strikes that are crippling many functions of government.
Libby Hogan reporting. Tom Andrews, the UN Special Rapporteur for the Situation of Human Rights in Myanmar, said the escalation of a military presence in Myanmar's biggest cities makes him very nervous.
This is a very, very important moment, and I think that we now have an opportunity to see a resolution to this that avoids bloodshed if the Tatmadaw appreciates the fact that this is not going to go away, that they are not going to be able to turn the clock back to where it was.
In Yangon, protesters march carrying signs calling for ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi to be released from detention. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Indonesia kicked off a vaccination campaign for vendors and workers at the country's biggest textile market. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's wife, Ri Sol-ju, appeared on state media for the first time in more than a year Wednesday. Reports say the Tokyo Olympic Committee will select a woman as its new chief after sexist comments forced the resignation of her predecessor. Cambodia's government has issued a decree establishing a China-style internet gateway that will allow online traffic to be controlled and monitored. With falling rates of COVID-19 infection in India, some experts believe the worst of the disease has passed. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. Rights groups in the United States say they're seeing a rise in hate speech and attacks against Asian Americans since the coronavirus pandemic began last year. Several recent violent incidents involving older Asian Americans have increased worries over anti-Asian bigotry. Isha Sarai has more.
Asians against violence.
Protesters have taken to the streets to speak out against hate following a sharp uptick in attacks against Asian Americans over the past month, most recently in Oakland, California.
It could have been my mother, or it could have been my
my father or my grandparent that was attacked in the driveway.
Oakland police have responded by shifting more resources into the city's Chinatown area.
We've shifted resources to our Chinatown community. We've put our command posts in the Chinatown community, moving it from different locations so that it's seen as a presence throughout Chinatown. We've increased our routine patrols in our Chinatown area.
Reported attacks on Asian Americans have been steadily rising since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, which former President Trump called the China virus because of its origins in Wuhan.
We do know that the rise in anti-Asian racism and attacks against our community over the past year has had devastating impacts.
More than 2,800 incidents of racism and discrimination against Asian Americans in the U.S. have been reported over the past year to the organization Stop AAPI Hate. President Joe Biden signed an executive order last month aimed at combating racial discrimination against Asian Americans.
He is concerned about the discrimination against the actions against the Asian American community.
Most of the reported incidents against Asian Americans since last March were cases involving verbal harassment or shunning, while about 9% of incidents reported physical assaults. Isha Sarai, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia. Nearly 4,000 Indonesian firms, many of them textile companies, have signed up to take part in a proposed scheme that would allow the private sector to purchase COVID-19 vaccines procured by the government and inoculate their own staffs. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. China is promising to provide its Sinovac vaccine to Central and Eastern European countries scrambling to obtain COVID-19 vaccinations for their populations. Beijing's pledge came at a summit earlier this month with 17 Central and Eastern European nations in what experts see as part of a global effort by Beijing to expand influence and diversify China's trading partners. More from VOA's Ardita Donolari.
China's pandemic diplomacy comes at a time when Central and Eastern European countries face increasing pressure from their populations for life-saving vaccines. But their inability to procure the necessary doses has given China an opening, says analyst J. Stephen Morrison.
You know, the Western states, the most powerful European and North American countries, are hoarding their supplies of vaccines. The Chinese are coming forward and aggressively marketing theirs and using them as diplomatic tools.
Distributing the Chinese vaccines is aimed at generating goodwill, but Beijing is also trying to drive a wedge between the region and its Western allies, says expert Valbona Zeneli.
You know, in Southern Europe, in Central Eastern Europe, it's been this idea of pushing the dissatisfaction with the European Union and the way that the European Union has handled, vaccination, but also previously the crisis.
Since 2012, China has offered direct investments and loans for major infrastructure projects in Central and Eastern Europe and promised increased trade, but almost a decade later, these projects have produced few jobs or economic boost for local businesses. Now there are growing concerns over Chinese business practices that ignore labor rights and environment protections.
In most of cases, these are loans that will be paid back from the governments of these countries. Non-transparent contracts where we see Chinese companies implementing the projects. In most of the cases, Chinese labor force and Chinese raw materials.
When it comes to trade, Zeneli notes a deepening imbalance in which Chinese companies are the main beneficiaries and local businesses have seen little increase in their exports to China. That may be about to change as China looks for new import partners to reduce its dependence on U.S. imports, says J. Stephen Morrison.
They're turning away from that deep interdependence. They're trying to lower that and they want to find replacement. Well, maybe then there's a more serious engagement here when they come and talk about export markets into China from Eastern and Central Europe. Maybe this time around it's more serious.
Morrison adds that China took a major gamble by rolling out its vaccines before completing the rigorous full trials. Failure, he warns, could be detrimental and not just for China's reputation.
That could destroy the public trust and confidence in vaccines. It could begin to set us back. The world needs to move forward towards a common achievement of herd immunity, of getting to 75 or 80% of coverage with safe and effective vaccines.
As China pushes to expand its influence, experts stress the need for a more assertive engagement from Western powers to ensure that China is not using weaknesses in Central and Eastern Europe to gain an unfair advantage in the global marketplace.
The most important thing is creating a level playing field, a transparent playing field for the rules of the global economy.
In Europe and beyond, where China has ambitions, experts say Beijing needs to prove that it is willing to embrace its responsibilities of being a global power that plays by the rules. Arita Dunelari, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Satellite images show China has dismantled dozens of structures and moved vehicles to empty out entire camps along a disputed Himalayan border where Indian and Chinese troops have been locked in a face-off since last summer. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The price for a single Bitcoin briefly crossed the $50,000 threshold Tuesday in early trading. To learn more about what's behind the cryptocurrency's recent gains and what it means for the sector and the economy moving forward, VOA Steve Miller spoke with William Luther, Assistant Professor of Economics at Florida Atlantic University and the Director of the Sound Money Project at the American Institute for Economic Research.
Well, it's important to recognize that Bitcoin is first and foremost a medium of exchange. It has the potential to be a money. And so all the speculation surrounding Bitcoin concerns the extent to which it's actually going to do that. So the demand for Bitcoin is primarily driven by people's usefulness of Bitcoin as a medium of exchange or their expectation that it will be a useful medium of exchange in the future. And so broad brushstroke. People are expecting that Bitcoin is more likely to be a useful medium of exchange in the future. That's why the price is being driven up today.
Now, you mentioned medium of exchange. Unlike the dollar, the euro, other currencies around the world, Bitcoin isn't pegged to a particular economy. There's no intrinsic value to a Bitcoin other than the value that other people place on it. So what does that do in terms of kind of regulating the value of such, because it's not pegged to something that many people see in a physical world?
So most monies that we use today are not backed by anything. They're intrinsically worthless. That is, they're either useful as a money, as a medium of exchange, or they're not useful at all. The dollar is not backed by anything. A dollar is only worth what other people are willing to hand over in exchange for those dollars. But where the dollar and the euro and the renminbi differ from Bitcoin is that those government-issued currencies, they have some demand support from their government. If you're in the U.S. and you're using dollars, you don't have to worry that the government is going to suddenly stop using dollars. And the government is a big player in the U.S. economy. And so the value of the dollar has a sort of lower bound, right? Because you can always hand over these notes to the government and get some base level value there. With Bitcoin, there is no government standing at the ready to accept these, say, in the payment of taxes or in the payment of fees. And so the value can fluctuate quite a bit. There's no base level of value there because there's no inherent demand support from a big institution like a government. And so that does create scope for much bigger swings in the purchasing power of Bitcoin relative to, say, the dollar or the euro.
Steve Miller spoke with William Luther, assistant professor of economics at Florida Atlantic University and director of the Sound Money Project at the American Institute for Economic Research. Happening in China, China will pay a price for its human rights abuses. U.S. President Joe Biden warned Tuesday, responding to queries at a televised event on the Asian nation's handling of Muslim minorities in its far western region of Xinjiang. Stay with us for the latest news from and about Asia at voanews.com and all of our digital platforms. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the military alliance will only leave Afghanistan when security conditions allow. The comments come as a May 1st deadline for withdrawing troops set out in the peace deal with the Taliban nears. NATO has just under 10,000 troops there, helping to train and advise the Afghan security forces. Most are not U.S. forces, but NATO could not operate without American support. President Joe Biden is reviewing his predecessor's 2020 deal with the Taliban. Calls are mounting for him to delay the pullout. Despite rising violence, Stoltenberg says NATO's presence is conditions-based and that the Taliban have to meet their commitments. He said Wednesday that the focus should be on re-energizing Afghan peace talks. An historic winter storm has killed more than 20 people, left millions of Texans without power, and spun killer tornadoes in the United States Southeast. Matthew Larentanda reports.
The brutal winter weather across the southern United States has now killed at least 21 people, left millions without power, and spun tornadoes in multiple states. Four of those killed were in a house fire in Texas, with other deaths linked to the bitter cold. Officials have warned people not to bring grills or propane heaters indoors after carbon monoxide poisoning killed at least two people and hospitalized several others. As an Arctic air mass pushed temperatures to historic lows on Tuesday, several facilities opened their doors as warming centers as volunteers rallied to help. The rare deep freeze has also forced the closure of some COVID vaccination centers. Officials in Texas have drawn some criticism as the power grid repeatedly failed there, forcing rolling blackouts, partly because wind turbines had frozen still. The treacherous weather is expected to grip much of the country through Friday. An approaching storm will likely bring more snow, ice, and sleet from the Texas Panhandle through Kentucky, up through Washington, D.C., to New York City, New Jersey, and Boston.
That was Reuters correspondent Matthew Larentanda. We continue on VOA Asia. For the first time, wild camels have been sold in Australia's leading online livestock auction. Australia has the world's largest herd of feral camels that were introduced in the 1840s. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Auctioneers in Australia weren't sure if the group of 93 Arabian camels would sell online, but they all sold for as much as $230 each. Most were bought to keep prickly weeds under control on farms, and there was interest from domestic meat traders. The animals had been rounded up or mustered by helicopter on a remote property in Queensland. Scott Taylor is a selling agent who helped arrange the auction. He says it took 2 days for all the wild camels to be caught.
They came in, I think it was probably about 60 k's back to the yards. They were mustered in over a two-day period. Yeah, they just came straight in out of the bush and into the yards, and it's surprising how quickly they settle down once they get into captivity for being a feral animal.
Almost 100 animals were sold on Auctions Plus, an online service that normally trades in cattle, sheep and goats. It's estimated there are at least 300,000 feral camels in central Australia. They can often compete with livestock for scarce supplies of water. Thousands have been killed by farmers. They've been declared agricultural pests by state authorities, including Western Australia. Wild herds are also considered to be a health and safety risk to isolated indigenous communities. The animals were imported from South Asia and elsewhere in the mid-19th century. They were used in colonial Australia as transport, but when they were superseded by motor vehicles, many were released into the wild or escaped. They have, like other invasive species, adapted to Australia's harsh conditions. Australia has had a long and disastrous record of importing animals that have become uncontrollable feral pests, including cats, foxes, pigs, and cane toads. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
99-year-old toy inventor Eddie Goldfarb has created over 800 toys, and he's not planning to stop. Karina Bafrantian talked to Goldfarb about his decades-long career and why making toys is truly a noble profession.
Yakety-yak talking teeth, bubble guns, race cars, and hundreds more toys for all kinds of tastes. Inventor Eddie Goldfarb has made over 800 children's toys during his 70-year career. He has sold his creations to some of America's largest toy companies. In 2003, Goldfarb was inducted in the Toy Industry Hall of Fame. He tried many different inventions before deciding to focus on toys.
I invented in all kinds of industries and didn't get very far. And since I didn't have any funds, any real money to back me up, I decided that toys might be a cheap way of getting in. And that's how I chose toys.
Eddie Goldfarb was born to Polish and Romanian parents in 1921 in Chicago. He was serving in the Navy during World War II when he invented his very first toys. But it was not until 1949 that he presented the invention at the North American International Toy Fair in New York. It was a huge success and kicked off his decades-long career in the toy industry. Daughter Lynn Goldfarb, who is a film director, made a movie about her father's journey.
Well, it was great. We always got to try out toys, you know, that my father was inventing. But, you know, one of the, when you grow up in a household of an inventor where their ideas, you know, are so important, we were always sworn to secrecy with our friends. We were never allowed to talk about the toys that were being, you know, invented.
In 1985, Goldfarb was among the first to start working on video games, including the Barbie video game, but he later opted to focus only on what he calls real toys.
And at the beginning, when the children are young, they need toys to help their development. It's like going to school. And so it's very important that they start playing games and start playing with toys. And that's part of their education.
Goldfarb isn't fazed by the popularity of smartphones and gaming among kids these days. He says the COVID lockdowns have shown that toys continue to bring people together in important ways.
And another reason why I like the phone is because it reminds my parents about their childhood. And when coronavirus came, we played the phone the most, because it brought me and my mom and dad together.
For Goldfarb, there is always room in the world for more toys, so he plans to keep inventing more.
When you do creative work, you stimulate your brain.
And when it comes to toys and games, anything can give me an idea.
Karina Bafrajan for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Amy Heibel, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Try to stay safe and enjoy your day ahead.